make it happen.
Let's go!
Oh, that was beautiful. And we say goodbye to Aaron, who joined us for that wonderful intro. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast. We come to you on the back of a pretty amazing away day at Wolverhampton Wanderers. But before we get into, I think, what can be described as, in my opinion, one of the best away days of the season, let's see who we've got on the show today. We say hello to Chloe. Chloe, good morning. How are you, mate?
I'm good. I'm still buzzing from yesterday. So yeah, I'm great. Thank you.
Fantastic. Of course, Chloe, you bounce around the country going to all these away games. So you're, you know, even though it's only 10 minutes down the road from me, your experience is always invaluable. So we look forward to getting your insight as to what it was like at the Molyneux. We also say good morning to Toby. Toby, mate, how are you? Welcome back.
Good morning. Good morning. Yeah, it's unusual for Albion Obsessed to be recording this early, but you can't miss up an opportunity like that after we win 3-0. So yeah, I'm absolutely buzzing at the moment, mate.
Good skills, Toby. Good skills. And apologies for getting you all out of bed a bit early. It's all my fault. Stupid family. And we also say hello to Dan. Dan, mate, how are you feeling after a great victory yesterday?
Yeah, I'm not doing too bad. Yeah, it's all good. Nice 3 points, breaking that record points total is all good.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad you mentioned the points total because, yes, I think that's probably one of the first things we can talk about. We've finally gone and won 10 games in the Premier League and we sit pretty on 44 points, which is our record points total with 3 games still to play. It is looking pretty bright, I have to say. So, as ever, let's dive straight into our post-match analysis of our game against Wolves. Now, I think in the last podcast, when we looked ahead to Wolves, we all said that Wolves are going to be a tough team to beat. They have, or had, the best defensive record outside of the top three. So, Chloe, I mean, you were travelling up to Molyneux. As you were going up there, what was the feeling on the coach? Was there a sense of optimism, or was it sort of, oh, we think today is going to be a bit of a struggle because we're coming up against such a resolute team?
I always feel more confident going to an away game. You think no matter who we're playing, there's a chance we can get something. And Wolves, it was a sort of game, I was expecting it to be the sort of game where it was decided by a goal. So when we missed that penalty early on, I was thinking, oh shit, that's our opportunity gone. But yeah, they obviously weren't as solidly as defensive as I expected them to be. And so yeah, I was expecting a tight game, and it wasn't a tight game, which was good for us because we obviously got 3 points, 3 goals. Great day out. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the away form there, Claire, because I think this season that has been a pivotal part of our success. Toby, what do you put that down to, that away form? I think it's accrued something like 28 points away from home. I think that would see us sit fourth if we were just going off points on away days. What do you think has made our away performances this season just so good?
It's hard to place your finger on it, but also remember that one game where Graham Potter decided to treat a home game like an away game and made them all stay in the hotel and then come in, and we got the 3 points that day. Or that might have even been last season. But yeah, it's just something about being on the road that has that extra bit of magic. I do think that the fans are better on the road, particularly with the Brighton fans. I do think that we're particularly louder away. You know, sometimes you've got 3,000 of us away out singing a stadium of 40,000, you know what I mean? So it's I do think that does play a factor. But I think there's just a little bit of magic, just a little bit of magic that you sprinkle in every now and then. You know, it always feels a bit better. I'm sure the players are probably a little bit more up for it because it's just, oh, imagine if we came away with this with 3 points, and then they do. But there's no real tactical reason that I can place my finger on.
Yeah, I'm glad you said about that away day where Potter, well, I say not away day, home day, where Potter made them stay at a hotel. Maybe that's the way forward, Dan. Maybe when we play Man United next weekend, Potter can put them up in a hotel and maybe we could even sell a greater allocation to Man U fans. Because let's face it, they wouldn't have to travel far because it's not like they're from Manchester, is it?
No, well, that's the sort of thing we always say about Manchester United fans. They don't live that far away. But yeah, that day was if I remember rightly, it was odd because when we hear about from Bruno, where they were staying in a hotel, it was like, that's an interesting tactic to use. If that works, well, carry on. Put them in a hotel somewhere, it'd be quite nice. But I've got some opinions on United, which I'll leave till later.
I couldn't resist the subtle dig at United there, because I think there's always a bit of banter to be had about that. So the first half then. So I watched the first half on a stream, and I have to say, we were playing some excellent football. We were open, we were expansive, and we looked threatening every time. Now, Chloe, as I say, you were there, you were at the Molyneux. I'm just going to ask you a question about three players, if I may. The midfield three of Bissouma, Caicedo and Mwepu. I think those three have been pivotal in this sort of change of form. Yesterday, those three players, they just looked phenomenal. What was it like in the ground watching those three do what they do?
Yeah, I feel they just break up play quite well, drive it forward. It's such a difference. And we seemed to actually attack with a bit of pace when we did get the ball, and you know, well, it didn't always result in a goal, but Bissouma obviously got a goal, which is quite unusual for him. You sort of expect it to go into the crowd when he shoots, but yeah, that was really good to see. And I hope Mwepu isn't too badly injured, because obviously he went off, and he's been having some great games recently, him and Caicedo. Just, I'm so glad that we've started. I'm not sure why we didn't start playing Caicedo sooner, because it's like, that's his fourth match in the Premier League, and honestly, he just looks so, so good. He looks like he's been playing in it his whole life. He's only 20, I believe, which is younger than me, which is depressing. But he's just, I can see him being sought after by like top clubs, which does worry me a bit. Bissouma obviously already got that kind of interest. But that midfield three is just such, I think when you do those three, for me, have to be first names on the team sheet, really. That is, you want those three in, and then you can build the rest of the team around it, because they're just phenomenal and they just work so well together. They just work like a well-oiled machine, really. It's just incredible to watch.
I couldn't agree more, really. I'm just going to touch on Mwepu before we go on to the man Caicedo, because I've got so much praise for Caicedo. But I just want to talk about Mwepu, if I may, Toby. How refreshing is it to see a player pass forward instead of passing it sideways or back?
Yeah, I mean, this guy is something special. I know we've had players like this in the past, but he's got, you know, like every Zambian football fan very excited about what this guy can do. When he arrived, I was sort of a little bit like, I don't really see the value. But then past that Liverpool game where he scored that absolute cracker, which I'm certain he meant as a shot, he just seems to have this just weird self-confidence and belief that just makes him probably one of the top 10 midfielders in the league, to be honest, on his day. You know, I think that we keep speaking about it, but the three, Caicedo, Bissouma, Mwepu, when Bissouma wants to play, and now that Caicedo is coming in, I know I'm repeating what Chloe said, but how has he not been starting sooner? This guy looks phenomenal. Our midfield trio, you know, you think about Iniesta, Xavi, the prime Barcelona midfielder. Like, this is better. I'd rather have this. That might be a dramatization, but I'm very, very impressed, I have to say.
So Toby's gone on record and said he'd rather have this than Prime Barca. But I have to admit, mate, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. And so is Chloe. You know, these three guys have to be in that starting 11 conversation every week. Obviously, I know we've said it before, so much depends on who you're up against, but they're just looking absolutely fantastic. And Dan, Mwepu had one of our first attempts on goal, but it just shows you the confidence. He had March on the outside right, and he didn't pass. He went for a hell of a shot, and Saar managed to get a hand to it. Does that show that, you know, just the sort of confidence that Mwepu is playing with at the moment?
Well, you think most of the times he's had a shot on goal, he's scored, it's always been like a worldie. Well, you know, he's probably got some of the goal of the season contenders already. So really, in the way, you can see the confidence that he has in it. I would have much rather he did pass it to March, because maybe it might have been a bit of a better opportunity, maybe. But if, as he's got a shot on target, I don't think it really matters that much.
Yeah, it was a hell of a shot. And it was an opportunity for Brighton. And I think the first half very much panned out that way. We had quite a few opportunities against, as I say, a very well-drilled, very well-oiled defensive unit that is Wolves. But we just passed through them with relative ease. So let's talk about that first penalty. First of all, bit contentious. I know some of the Wolves fans weren't very happy about it. Solly March down the right, he puts in a cross, and the Wolves player sort of drifts into the ball and it hits his arm. Chloe, for you in the ground, what was the mood like from the Wolves fans when that was given as a penalty?
I've got to be honest, I couldn't really hear them. Just heard Brighton fans all elated and then like, oh crap, we've got to score a penalty. There wasn't much confidence, I don't think, that we were going to score it. But yeah, when you saw that they were checking, it was like, oh, we're going to get a penalty. We might get a penalty. And then you had to go and look at the monitor. And I think, yeah, I could only hear excitement from Brighton fans. The Wolves fans were a little bit quiet all game, to be honest. So, yeah.
There was one moment where the Wolves fans weren't very quiet at all, and we'll come on to that a bit later, especially after what happened when we played Leeds. But we'll come on to that in a bit. Toby, for you, mate, was it a penalty?
Yeah, I think it was. If you're going to lean towards the ball, you've got to have your arm directly down by your side, and it was out enough to say that he was trying for it, extending it just that little bit. I think if the intent wasn't there, then it wouldn't have been given. But you can see that his human reaction has just put his arm out a little bit there. So, yeah, I'd give that as a penalty.
Yeah, he definitely leans into it. I think if you're going to lean like that, you've either got to fully commit so the ball hits your chest, or you've just got to let the ball come in. He's left himself open there for me. Now, Dan, Ali Mack, who was my choice of penalty taker when we were chatting about in the group, because as Chloe says, as soon as we get a penalty, in our group chat, we were automatically messaging and saying, who's going to take this? Our penalty stats haven't been great this season. I think we'd missed the previous three penalties we had taken. So when Alexis McAllister stood up to the plate, Dan, were you confident? Obviously, we know what happened, but like at the time, do you remember, were you confident that Ali Mack could do the business?
I think really when I saw it was going to be him taking it, I was hopeful more of anything to see if he would score it. Because I think we said about it, was it West Brom last season? This is the last one he'd taken. For me, for someone to take a penalty, I've always said strikers to take penalties. So obviously I know we've had Morpay have his chances, obviously he's missed theirs. I did say Welbeck in the group chat, I think maybe we should give him a shot. But yeah, when he missed it, I thought yeah, strikers should take it really, I think. But you know, that's hindsight.
Yeah, we had a chat about who should take the penalty. I mean, it's again, I said it before. It's always difficult to look at these things with hindsight because we knew the outcome. And it hit the post, which is unfortunate. And we'll talk about just how much character it took for Alexis to step up and take the second one in just a minute. But we were talking about the, in my view personally, I think the cleanest hitter of the ball should be taking the penalties. And for me, that's Alexis McAllister, followed maybe by Dunk and then perhaps Veltman. But Chloe, let's talk about the second penalty. I know stuff happened in between. But that second penalty, just how much character and let's just put it this way, balls. How much balls does that take to step up and take the second penalty knowing that you've already failed to convert the first one?
Yeah, that shows so much character. When I saw he was stepping up to take it, I thought, if he misses this, he's going to be absolutely like devastated, surely. And fans will probably be on his back. And I was like, that's so much pressure on him. And but yeah, he showed tremendous character to not only take it, but actually put it in a similar place and score. And when it did go in, it was just like, you know, kudos to him. He's really shown a lot of character under a lot of pressure there. So well done to him is all I can say, really.
Huge well done. Now, Toby, I don't know if you saw it, mate, but when the second penalty was given, Trossard and McAllister were having a bit of an argument about who was going to take it. And Lewis Dunk went over and took the ball off Trossard and was like, Alexis McAllister is going to take this. What are your views, Toby, on taking a penalty after you've missed one? Is it a case of old school, it moves down the line of penalty takers? Or do you think Alexis should have had another crack at the whip, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, when we started speaking, the first thing my mind went to was, I hate the fact that we're playing penalty roulette at Brighton. I think, you know, Mope missed, obviously, at Norwich. And I remember, you know, I turned away and I looked away. It's the first time I've ever looked away from a penalty because I couldn't stomach watching it. I still haven't even watched a replay of that yet, so I still don't even know how bad of a miss it was. I remember all the fans that were next to me at that game were saying, "Oh, it's your fault. You've never done that before. You've broken the trend or whatever." So I made sure to watch Ali Mack's first one, and yeah, that didn't go too well. And then I made sure to watch the second one as well. And yeah, I think honestly, I'd rather see the same player step up and take three penalties and miss the ball than watch three different penalty takers miss three, because I think back to, you know, near where you are in the Midlands against West Brom, and we missed two with two different penalty takers, and I think maybe on that day, if we had given it to the same player twice, we might have ended up scoring it. I can't remember if they got subbed or not, to be honest. I'm not going to go that into detail, but yeah, I do hate the penalty roulette at Brighton, and I wish we had someone that's like, that person is it, and that's always going to be the way. And if they miss one, it doesn't matter. You know, I'm sure if Harry Kane missed one for Tottenham, he'd be on the next one straight away anyway. So I think it is an old school mentality to switch it out and go down the line. Obviously, there's a limit, maybe like three in a row. But other than that, yeah, I'm quite happy to let him take it again.
Yeah, it's very unlikely that you're ever going to get more than three penalties a game. But yeah, that game against West Brom, Welbeck and Gross missed penalties. That was a hard day to take. Now, Dan, just quickly on that second penalty, do you feel like the Wolves keeper, Saar, might be a bit disappointed because he did get two hands to it? It nestled in the back of the net. And I don't want to play devil's advocate too much because obviously we scored and that's happy days for us. But do you think the Wolves keeper would be disappointed not to have kept that out?
I mean, from a goalkeeper's perspective, you've got to sort of hope that you can save it every single time. But obviously, sometimes you just can't. It's all how clean he struck that ball and how with the power and all that. You can try as much as you can, but if it just slips past your hands, it just slips past your hands. It's not like he can do about it. He can be frustrated, you know, if he sees the goal. But I think if he got a grasp to it, I think that's all he can really do.
Yeah, it was a well-struck penalty. And as Chloe says, it takes so much character to not only step up and take the second one, but also to put it in exactly the same place. So fair play to Alexis McAllister. He puts us up 1-0 and we saw out the first half with relative ease. At the start of the second half, guys, we were playing fantastically again. We were creating chances, but we weren't, at the time, putting them away. And now that's something, Chloe, that Brighton have been quite guilty of this season. And I know, obviously, that we went on to win the game 3-0, which is fantastic, our best result of the season. But was there ever a sense inside the ground that at 1-0 up, we were still, I suppose, vulnerable to Wolves getting back into the game?
I do think it was a bit nervy at 1-0. We did sort of... I still think we were quite... you know, we let them have the ball, but we defended well. It didn't feel too uncomfy. It was just a bit nervy because obviously we only had the one goal. And we were still attacking. We were still trying to get a second. And you think, you know, we probably can get a second. It looks like we're attacking well, we're creating chances, and their defense hasn't been that good this game, so there's no reason we can't get another goal. I did notice I think it was when Trossard was driving forward at one point and he lost the ball, and Brighton fans just sort of groaning, and it's like, don't get on their backs, we are winning. And I do think we did have a few chances where we were going forward and you sort of wanted them to do a bit better. But you know what? We ended up scoring three goals, and that's more than enough, to be honest. And I think we were solid enough defensively that we didn't have to worry too much about them. And they didn't offer that much. They had a few chances, a few corners and stuff, but I don't think they ever really looked that threatening. I didn't feel like they'd score. So it was nervy because of the scoreline, but it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, I think that's obviously, as I say, we already know what happened after that. But I think early in the second half, I was very much okay. I was very much like, we need to score now. And I think it just took a while to get there. Maybe not too long, but obviously it took a few minutes. We had quite a lot of chances in that first part of that second half. And I was just sitting there going, come on, put the second goal, put it, you know, get it in there, make it a bit more comfortable. Now, I'm going to touch upon like the defensive display in just a second. But before I come on to that, I'm going to come on to the man of the moment for me, Moises Caicedo, because that second goal and the third goal all come because that man, Toby, is breaking up play. And for the second goal, he breaks up play. He pays the simple pass forward to Welbeck, who sprints 30 yards, gives it to Trossard, who curls it around the defender. Just before we go on to a bit more about the goal itself, just how good is Caicedo, Toby? Tell me just how brilliant that young man is.
He's the all-round modern-day footballer. You know, he's going to get a Ballon d'Or one day. I have no doubts about it. The guy is Kante, but better. The guy is... I'm trying to think of legendary midfielders. Patrick Vieira, Roy Keane. Wrap them all up in one, and this is guy. I've never seen someone as quick to think about the things that he does as him. And I think he's so young. Like, as Chloe said, he's younger than me. And that's just like, wow. And I'm really, really impressed by him. And the fact that he is leaving me speechless is just a testament to really how good he is. I really, really hope that we push on next season, maybe even keep Bissouma and just try and get this one season where we really, really push, really impress these players that we want to stay at our club, maybe even get a little bit of Europe or something in there just to make sure they stay. And then we just push on with them. Because honestly, all these young players that we've got just chilling here, I don't see them just chilling here if we're not doing well. So yeah, I just really hope that they can all contribute again next season. And I really wish that we had Caicedo from the start of the season. But the prospect of, you know, having Mitoma, Undav, Kozlowski, Caicedo, potentially Bissouma, but you know how that is. Mwepu, honestly, our midfield and attack is going to be scary. Defences are done out here.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head, Toby. The best way to keep these players at this club is to show them our ambitions and not just, you know, say it with words, actually show them on the pitch and show them in a table. Look, we're aiming to be top 10. We're aiming to push on to top 7, top 6. That's how you're going to keep Bissouma at the club. That's how you're going to keep Caicedo at the club. And just really briefly on Caicedo again, this young man has played 5 Premier League games. And as Chloe says, he's looked like he's played here for a season, 2 seasons. His breakup play is nothing short of phenomenal. He started the move for the second goal. He started the move for the third goal. And as you say, Toby, imagine where we could have been if he had been in the squad during that run of, 6 games without a win. You know, think of where we could be as a club if we had beaten Burnley and Norwich. And it's just sort of, you know, the sky's the limit for this squad under Graham Potter, in my opinion. We've got everything in place to be a consistent top 10, pushing on for, you know, lofty ambitions of potentially top 6. And it's going to happen. I'm going to guarantee in the next few years, it's going to happen. Even if it's just a one season, you know, wonder like Burnley, like Wolves, I think we can do it. And that's how we keep these players like Caicedo, like Bissouma. That's how we keep them, by showing them this is our dream. This is our ambition. You're a part of it. And just my last thing on Caicedo, I love him and I'm going to get his name on the back of my shirt next season. That's just it, because he's just impressed me so much. I'm going to go back. That tackle against Mahrez on City when Sanchez did that blind pass. Oh my God, that was just phenomenal. But yeah, enough about Caicedo. Let's talk about Trossard's goal then, Dan. Another really scintillating goal from Trossard. Uses the Wolves defender really well, bends it round. Saar, no chance. Trossard's hit a real fantastic purple patch, Dan. Can he go on and keep scoring for the rest of the season?
I don't see why he can't, really. He's doing very well. After a certain Aaron was saying that he only turns up against top 6, still waiting for pieces to do an on-screen apology. But we'll... I'll keep badgering about that, I think. He's come into form, I think, at the right time. We needed some form from him. He's now got 7th now for the season, which is good. Just long may it continue. I'm hoping that he can hit double figures and start helping us secure this top 10 finish.
Yeah, he's been really good since coming back from the international break. And I'm loving his little... binocular celebration. Really, real big fan of that. It's the simple things, isn't it? It's like I used to love the Glenn Murray hand to the head, and I'm loving the binoculars. I just love it. It's brilliant. It's simple and easy. Another person, Chloe, that was instrumental in that second goal was Danny Welbeck. And we've chatted a lot about Welbs over the last few episodes, but just really quickly, do you think that man is playing out of his skin at the moment because he wants that new contract?
It might be that. It might just be that he's linking up well with the midfield. I don't know why. He has just been really good the last few games. And I would give him a new contract based on how he's been playing recently, because he's just been a very important part of our attack. Even when he's not scoring, he's getting assists. You know, it's really, I think he's a very important player for us at the moment. And I didn't actually rate him that much earlier on in the season, even like 4 or 5 games ago, I wasn't that keen, but recently he's convinced me, you know, again, that he is actually a class striker, and I hope we keep him for another year. I hope we give him a new contract.
I put it in chat the other day, but sign the ting.
Yes, I need him. Imagine, as like you said, Toby, imagine a striking force of Mope, Welbeck, Undav, Trossard, if you want to class him as a forward or a wing back or whatever, Matoma. That's 5. And then you've got like Ferguson and of course Aaron Connolly. But you know, you've got, and then obviously Kadra as well. You've got all these players that can make our strike force next season really threatening. Exciting times for us. Now, Toby, third goal. Just want to come to you on this one really quickly. Again, Caicedo breaks up the play, gives it to Trossard, gives it to Cucurella, cross goes in, ball comes kindly to Bissouma, strikes it, scores. Something that we're not really used to, as Chloe says, normally it just flies above the bar. Bissouma scored a great goal, but he doesn't celebrate. Now, a lot of people pick up on these little things. Oh, he didn't celebrate a goal. Do you think that's just because Bissouma was a bit shocked that it actually went in? Or do you think it was just we're 3-0 up, we don't need to celebrate? Or is this part of the Illuminati triangle and Bissouma is actually off in the summer and he doesn't care?
I mean, firstly, I'll touch on Bissouma's end of season pointless goals expedition. He does this quite frequently, really, where it's just like a goal that doesn't really matter. It comes at the end of a win anyway. And then, you know, it's normally an edge of the box little banger. So this is Bissouma's yearly call up, first of all. No, I said in chat yesterday, I thought he looked quite happy after scoring that goal. And you had Dunkey going sort of slapping on the back of the head. Everyone was like, ah, look at you, silly. You want to leave? Ah. So, you know, I'm of the opinion that he still needs convincing. I think that maybe... Do you know what I'd really like to see? In the end of season parade, when they're going round the Amex, just clapping at everyone and saying thank you and whatnot and bringing their family along, I would just love to see Eve Bissouma, we want you to stay. Because, like, just a big, like, appreciation for him that we've not had. Because as soon as it was like, oh, he's leaving, oh, that's the wrong attitude. No, listen, Dale Stevens said he was leaving, and we convinced him otherwise. Like, that's just a fact. I think the fans had a massive factor in that, and even to the point where the players were singing the same thing to him. So, yeah, I just really hope that we just give him the loudest appreciation, even if he goes or whatever. Just, you know, don't care about that. Just he'll probably get a large sum of money, but just if you hear this, be as loud as you can. Eve Bissouma, we want you to stay. Or I probably shouldn't say this, but Birmingham's a shithole. Like, Villa Park's a shithole. So I just think that he still needs convincing on the project. And hopefully a top 10 finish would secure his mind a little bit as well.
How dare you insult my adopted home? No, I think you're spot on, Toby. I definitely think it's worth bringing up that Dale Stevens thing, because I mentioned it on the pod a few weeks ago when it was the anniversary of the Wigan game. You know, marching down, you know, West Street, and you know, on the train, we want you to stay, because Dale, he wanted to go to Burnley, and he did eventually get his move seasons and seasons later. But if you show the players that they're loved, and you show your appreciation, you give them an extra reason to stay. Bissouma hopefully knows that he is loved here. Now, of course, we've had a lot of people on going on to Twitter, you know, Bissouma out because he didn't come over and clap the fans. Bissouma out because he didn't do his little dance that he does. Hopefully the fans at that last game against West Ham can, you know, be in really fine voice and sing him off the pitch. And if that is the last time we see him in the blue and white at the Amex, then, you know, fair play to him. But let's give him that reason to stay with a top 10 finish and singing loud and proud from the fans. So that sort of wraps up the game there. There was a last little scare at the end, wasn't there, Dan, where Wolves hit the post. But how happy do you think Sanchez and the boys at the back were to come away with a clean sheet there?
I think after him being, I saw the stats at the end of the match today that literally I don't think they're really that much of a threat, really, to even score. So I think to even with that late scare, I think they were quite happy to see it at the bottom and reflect out. They should be very fairly happy with that. I think Wolves didn't say they didn't really look very bad at that threatening, really. So I don't think they were really worried about losing their clean sheet. But But yeah, that was their own well doing, really. They did well to keep going, even in a late stage. So, all good.
All good in the hood, indeed. Now, Chloe, you go to a lot of away games. Where does this rank for you in terms of the games you've seen away from home today? I know we chatted a little bit about before we recorded, but as I say, it's the first time that we've put three past the team this season, and we inflicted Wolves' heaviest defeat this season. So where does this rank for you in terms of your travels this season?
See, it's weird because a lot of the games which I would consider good away days, and you know, where I've come away absolutely elated, aren't necessarily ones where we've won comfortably. Or it's like Palace was a great away day and we scraped a point and we probably didn't play that well. Liverpool was another one that was a very, very good away day and we drew again. I definitely think yesterday was up there just because it was so comfortable. It was, you know, Wolves are a good side and we just absolutely outplayed them. So it's definitely up there in sort of my top three of the season. I couldn't give an exact ranking because I've gone to so many and it's difficult to remember. But definitely top three away games of the season. Definitely.
Sound. That's pretty good, top three. From my perspective, it was very much possibly one of the easiest games, you know, based on what I've seen over a screen, of course. So we scored three times against a team that rarely concede. And we didn't concede any chances. We were just solid all over the pitch. And there's a few individual performances I want to just pick out here. First of all, Toby, your boy Lewis Dunk, who you want to sell to Burnley. I thought he looked back to his absolute best yesterday. I thought he looked commanding and decent. What did you make of Lewis Dunk's performance yesterday?
Yeah, he'll do good for Burnley in the Championship, won't he, actually? He did look quite good. all jokes aside, my captain, honestly, my hero. When I thought about it, after that Burnley podcast, I know it wasn't quite like that, talking about selling into Burnley. But I just thought to myself, if there's any chance that he leaves before his project is over, you know, like before he's finished as a player, if he leaves before he's finished as a player, I'd just be so sad because, like, this guy is a true one club man, you know, like he's our little piece of, like, stability. He's a bit of a rock in a ever-changing team. Every week there's a new lineup, but he seems to be one that's just always going to be there. And he always gives me, you know, really fond memories of watching Brighton over the last 10 plus years, about what this club's about. And I really hope that it continues for as long as it can. But the sad truth is, you know, everyone gets older and we probably won't have too many more years of Dunkey at his best. So we do need to cherish him while he's here. I saw talks about a testimonial for him on Twitter the other day, sort of like what players we'd invite back and whatnot. And I'd just love to get that whole promotion winning team back. That would just be great. But yeah, I there's no words that I can say about Lewis Dunk that will do him the justice that he deserves. The guy is true Brighton. He's absolute hero. I hope that all the kids that watch Brighton these days look up to him, will always be the one that, you know, if they're going for a header, they shout, Dunk! Like, I really just hope that he's that sort of level, because that's the level he is for me.
My captain, yeah. He, for me, he just epitomises the whole from with Dean to Wembley sort of mentality. He's been with us for such a long time, and I would absolutely love it if he finished his career here. I know that he did play a handful of games on loan at Bristol. But if you want to see a one club man, there's your man. And it's just so fitting that he is our captain in the Premier League. So, yeah, fantastic performance from our captain yesterday, Lewis Dunk. And there's just one more player I want to touch upon, Dan, who we haven't really chatted about too much yet, is Mark Cucurella. Because I thought, once again, you know, he looked fantastic yesterday. Now, I've been not critical, but sort of, I definitely think that Cucurella's best position is at wing back. But he's fit into that sort of left centre back position really well. And I thought he had a fantastic game yesterday. What were your views on Mr. Massive Hair yesterday?
Well, his hair is massive. I'd like to remind everybody his hair is very much massive. It is. His best position, I would say, is left wing back. But he attacks on that left. He does a very good shift down that left. But also, say as well, he's been playing that centre-back role. He's done very, very well, which he probably never thought in his wildest dreams he'd be asked to play centre-back in a back three when he first signed. Which for him is obviously, he's obviously worked really hard at it and made sure he can do that position, even though he's not the tallest defender or the tallest person either. Well, that hair probably makes up most of it. But he is a good player. I think he's definitely a contender for the player of the season from the fans' vote. Long may it continue. He's such a good player. And his hair, and again, his hair is massive.
Absolutely massive. And I'm glad you mentioned player of the season there, because obviously, we've only got three games left and we already are chatting about that. So if I could just come to you, each of you in turn, and just ask for just a player who you think deserves that player of the season award this year. Chloe, I'll come to you first. Has there been a player that's been a standout performer for you?
I can't lie, I voted for Mope, but Cucurella deserves it 100%, and he probably will get it. So, yeah.
Fair play. Hopefully we won't have any Leeds fans this season rigging the vote after what happened last year. Toby, where do you sit on the Player of the Season award? Who gets your vote, mate?
Do you know what? I was just about to say Ben White as a joke. You ruined it for me. I don't think I've voted or haven't voted yet, if you still can vote. I always find them pretty arbitrary, the fans' Player of the Season, particularly because Leeds fans can hijack the vote, that sort of thing. But if I were to give it to someone... Can I say Caicedo? No, I think he's not played enough yet. But for me, it would be Dunk or Cucurella. And I'd probably go Dunk. I know he's had a few patchy spots here and there throughout the season, but as I say, he's just the mainstay, the guy that everyone looks up to, the captain that holds the team together in a record points tally season, record win amount season, and he's still the captain. So pushing on forever with him at the back, really is so solid that his average is very good, but because it's his average, people don't recognise it as much. The standards he sets for himself are so high that every defender that plays alongside him, we sort of think, yeah, but he's not as good as Dunk though. And you look at England defenders and you're like, yeah, but they're not as good as Dunk, though. You look at all the best international defenders in the world and you're like, Ramos? Nah, I'd take Dunk.
I'm here for that sort of content, Toby. I'm here for it. Good shout. How about you, Dan, your player of the season?
See, for me, it's sort of like you'd want to do one for one half of the season, one other half of the season. Because, you know, that little dip we had in the middle. I voted for Webster because I thought he started to start so well. Then he had his injury. You could sort of see we were missing something. I thought that's sort of the reason why I sort of voted for him. But really, overall, you could really say Mark probably does deserve it. Other than that, I can't think of anything. I still sort of, it was at one point I was sort of thinking about it before, and it was sort of like everyone was sort of on level par with each other, and you sort of can't think of an absolute standout. But yeah, it'll probably be Mark, I think, for the fan vote. Players probably again, it'll probably be Duncan again, because they seem to like him being around. But for us, I think it probably deserves to be Mark, especially for that massive hair.
We do love the massive hair. Yeah, I mean, good shout out for Dunk, to be honest. I think we certainly missed him when he was serving his suspension and when he was injured. I think you could almost go through month by month and pick a different player out. Because as you say, Dan, there were times where Webster was looking world-class, Bissouma, even Mr. Dan Byrne in December and January. But for me, over the course of a season, it might not have been necessarily spectacular, but there are two players that stick out for me. One being Mark Cucurella, who's just been really, really consistent. And the other being Joel Veltman. Again, just for that consistency. He might not have done anything spectacular, but it's just that, you know, coming into the side, playing right back, right centre back, he just comes in and does his work, does his job. So they would be my two shouts. Again, they settle our team. Freudian slip there. Caicedo should be player of the season. But no, Veltman and Cucurella for me, just consistent week in, week out, 8 out of 10 performances every week. And it was just a fantastic day yesterday for both of them as well, which is why I brought it up today. Last thing to touch upon in that Wolves game is a spot of, not controversy, it's not controversial, but it's one of those things that becomes a bit of a talking point. And that is the celebrations at the end. Now, Twitter was a bit of a flutter after the game yesterday because of accusations that the whole team celebrated, bar Neil Mope. Now, Chloe, you were there. We weren't. Are fans overreacting about this? Is it something that we should be concerned about, or is it just fans? As we said earlier about the Bissouma thing, or Bissouma out because he didn't come and celebrate with the fans, is it just fans overreacting?
Yeah, I mean, I saw him clapping the fans when he was warming up and they were singing his song. So I don't know what it was. I don't know why he didn't come over. But, you know, maybe he just feels a bit awkward because he feels like, you know, he hasn't earned anything from the fans because he hasn't played. I would certainly feel a bit uncomfortable sort of, you know, getting involved when I haven't done anything in that game. But I when I did see he could not come over, because that is quite unusual for him, I wasn't thinking, what a twat, you know, why hasn't he come over? I was thinking, I hope he's all right, because that is unusual for him. He's normally the last clap in the fans. So it was a bit concerning, maybe, but I didn't think it was that notable, to be honest. I just thought, yeah, he didn't come and clap the fans. Maybe he just didn't feel he'd earned it. I don't know.
It's fair points, Chloe. Yeah, I feel like I share your concern there. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. Same with Bissouma. I didn't really care. I thought fans were just jumping on a player's back because that's what we fans do. But for me, I'd be more concerned from perhaps a mental health perspective, just to make sure he's okay, because he's not having the best run of form at the moment. So yeah, just for me, from my perspective, for what it's worth, I'd be more sort of like, I just hope that the lad's okay, and he's not beating himself up too much, because I feel that that's the sort of person he might be. He own harshest critic, and he feels that perhaps more than some of the other players. Other players might be able to shrug off, like McAllister yesterday. He might be able to shrug off that penalty miss. Yeah, whatever. But Neil, I think he takes that to heart. Toby, what are your views on the matter? Is it fans' overreaction? Is it bad attitude? Is it just Neil feeling down on himself? What do you reckon?
Yeah, I said in the chat as well, the first thing I said when someone mentioned it in the chat, I said, you know, you don't know what's going on in his life. You don't know, maybe he was rushing back to the changing room because he had a text that he was looking out for results or something. You know, you can't speculate about these things, so I'm not going to anymore. Yeah, I'm not really too concerned as a football fan, as a Brighton fan. I'm not too concerned about my club. I'm not going to be able to support Brighton anymore because Mopé didn't clap the fans. No, I am more concerned about him as a human being. You saw how dejected he looked after the Norwich penalty miss. And I think it was Joe that raised a good point that people were really getting on his back around Joe. And Joe had to say, hang on, everyone, just calm down here. He scored countless goals that have given us points this season. Everyone goes through a bad patch. Let's give him a bit of a break. So I don't think it's a new thing that he's maybe not been at his best mentally at the moment, because, as I say, against Norwich, he was dejected and just didn't look like he wanted to be there. So, not concerned as a Brighton fan, but very concerned for him as a human being.
Let's hope that no matter what happens, let's hope that he gets on the pitch in the next couple of games, manages to score a couple of goals, and, you know, that will probably sort him out right as rain and make Chloe definitely feel happy, I'm sure. And he can add to his potential goal of the season contenders. Our next game is against Manchester United, Dan. At the start of the show, he's even done the old click. At the start of the show, you said you had some very interesting points about this game. So I welcome you now to share them.
For me, obviously, everyone's going to be like, oh, you know, it's Man United and it's going to be hard game and this, that. I honestly think that Manchester United are there for the taking. They're not a scary club to face anymore. They only want one person, Ronaldo, who gets them out of trouble whenever they need him to. I honestly think that United literally are desperately there for the taking. They struggled against most teams. You can sort of see tactically they're not all there. Then he tried to change formation. It was a 4-2-2-2. I think someone said, I saw on Twitter, it's not worked. He hasn't changed. Rather, Rangnick has not really changed it either. I can honestly see us having a Graham Potter masterclass tactically again. Taking it to United and seeing Bruno Fernandes cry on the pitch would be also quite lovely as well.
I love it, Dan. Yeah, Chloe, do you share Dan's view that this is almost the perfect time to be taking on Manchester United, who seem to be going through a really strange couple of years, really? Do you think this is the opportunity for us to beat them at the Amex?
Well, they're on bad form and we're in good form, so you just know that it's going to end up with them beating us. Honestly, they are there for the taking, but it's Brighton and I never feel confident about that kind of game where they are doing so badly and it's at home. I think we could get something, but, you know, they do have players that are capable of sort of individual moments of brilliance where it can hurt you. Ronaldo obviously is the main one. So, you know, I would probably take a draw, but it is a chance to obviously get a win. And if we play well, then there's no reason we can't beat them because they really just don't look very good at the moment. So it's definitely a winnable game. Whether we will win is a different question.
As Aaron always says, it depends what Brighton side turn up. And just finally, Toby, what do you think about the Man United game? As a club, Manchester United seem to be all over the shop at the moment. Again, my footballing knowledge is not the best, I admit, but I get the idea that even if Klopp or Guardiola went into United instead of Rangnick, they wouldn't have been able to turn this mess around. What are your views on United at the moment?
I think I've said it before, and I'll say it again, but it's probably De Gea that would get into our team. Maybe that's it. I've said it before.
Warm the bench, right? to warm the pen.
Yeah, of course. I'm really not impressed, to be honest, mate. As you can imagine, I've got a lot of United fan mates. My brother-in-law's a United fan, so he probably won't appreciate me saying this, and I know he listens. But he, you know, United are just terrible. They're just terrible. The fact they've still got this global influence to even be able to sign Ronaldo, actually, it really pissed me off, because I was really excited at the prospect of him going to Man City before the season started. I thought that would be an excellent way to just absolutely showcase, you know, just stat pad, just see how many goals you can get, mate. Honestly, if he went to City, this league would look like a farmers league. But no, he went to United to give everyone a chance, which I'm grateful for. And yeah, I the problem is we're at home. If we were away right now, I'd tell you, yeah, that's an easy 2-0 Brighton. But being at home makes this so much more difficult to call, because you just don't know what Brighton side's going to turn up. You also just know that there's a mistake somewhere waiting to happen, where Ronaldo gets another open goal to stat pad against us. But as Dan says, United are a mess. They are really probably the worst top six side. I'm thinking Tottenham, Conte's Tottenham is a miles better side. Arsenal look like they're going back to where they used to be. City and Liverpool are leagues above. Chelsea just, they're somehow there. It feels like every week I'm watching them lose and they're somehow there. But United really are losing every week. So it's definitely the biggest chance we have of, you know, if we take down a name like Man United, take down a name like Ronaldo, definitely the best chance of having our really feel-good moment of the season, a really big celebration at the Amex, which unfortunately I won't be there, unfortunately. Prayers up for my granddad. He's got a bit of an issue with his legs at the moment, so he's unable to walk properly. So we won't be there. I was sort of hesitating about putting my ticket on the exchange, and because I'm worried that a Man United fan will get it, which has been a growing problem this season at the Amex. I've seen a lot of opposition fans. But I am going to put it up there just in the case that a Brighton fan is needing a ticket. So North Stand, look out for it, everyone. this is our best chance to beat Man United. Let's do it. Have a really good wrap up to the season.
Yeah, let's do it for Toby's granddad, and we wish him, you know, a speedy recovery. Hope he feels better soon. With United, I've said it before and I'll say it again. United have fantastic individuals all over the pitch. You know, they've got players that can change games. But as a team, I think we're better. As a team, as a cohesive unit, as a team, I think we're better than United. And I think this is the opportunity to not only put our home form on the right track, but also to get one over on United. It seems that whenever we play them, they get the dodgiest VAR decisions. You look back to the controversy of them getting a penalty after the final whistle. You look back to Maguire's blatant foul on Welbeck that should have been a penalty. Every time we play them in the VAR era, they get some dodgy call. So part of me is just wondering what it's going to be. So let's hope for a Brighton win. We also welcome Rangnick back to Sussex. Little factoid, if you don't know, Ralph Rangnick used to play for Southwick. So that's pretty cool. Back in the 1980s. So we welcome him back to Sussex. Now, just before we finish, I'm going to come to you for score predictions, but I'm also going to add a little spin on it this week. And before you give me your score prediction, I would like you to also tell me your first name on the team sheet. So, for instance, I might say first name on the team sheet for me is Moises Caicedo, and I think it's going to finish 2-1. And I'm going to go with Welbeck and Mope. So now I invite Chloe to share her number one player and scoreline.
Yeah, I would say Caicedo. And 2-0. And I think that'll be Trossard again. and Mope.
Love it. Here for that content. Toby.
Just to be original, I'm going to go Kukurea, even though it's still probably not that original. I because we're at home, I just can't be as optimistic. So I'm going to say 2-2.
A repeat of the Southampton scoreline. But to be fair, I wouldn't take a draw against Manchester United at the moment. However, you can't come up against Man United and, you know, turn your nose up at a draw. You just can't. And finally, Dan, your player, who's your first name on your team sheet, and your score prediction, please.
My first player, other than obviously Dunk, would be Caicedo too. Score, as I say at home, I'm not going to, I'd say 2-3-0. Maybe one, maybe I'll give him a bit of a chance. He'll 3-1. It'll be Trossard. Good to see Caicedo get a goal again. And Dunk header. And then obviously Ronaldo to try and help them out.
As we said in when we played them before, I would love it if Mope scored and then just did the see you in front of the United fans. I just love to see it. So please, Neil, make it happen. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Albion Obsessed. Let's hope that Brighton can put their home hoodoo to rest and we can go and take United to the cleaners next week. Thank you for Chloe, Toby and Dan for joining me this morning. And as ever, guys, please like, share and subscribe if you haven't already for more content coming your way soon. We've got loads of cool stuff coming to you. So in the meantime, take care and have a great day.
See you.